That made me that much angrier. Even when answering, he spoke as though he made perfect sense. When the prosecuting lawyer asked why he'd done what he had, he looked at her as though she were crazy. "Why, I had no choice," he said pleasantly. "I was dying. No one was going to condone me openly experimenting with the princess's powers. What would you have done in my place?" The lawyer ignored that. She was having a hard time keeping the disgust off her face. "And you found coaxing your own daughter into turning Strigoi also necessary?" Everyone in the courtroom shifted uncomfortably. One of the most awful things about Strigoi was that they were made, not born. A Strigoi could force a human, a Dampier, or a Moroi into becoming Strigoi if the Strigoi drank the victim's blood and then fed Strigoi blood back to the victim. It didn't matter if the victim wanted it or not. And once she became Strigoi, she lost all sense of her old moral self. She embraced becoming a monster and killing others to survive. Strigoi converted others if they found someone they thought would strengthen their ranks. Sometimes, they did it just out of cruelty. The other way a Strigoi could be made was if a Moroi willingly chose to kill another person during feeding, destroying all the magic and life within themselves. Christian's parents had done that because they wanted to be immortal, no matter the cost. Victor's daughter Natalie had done it because he had talked her into it. The extra strength and speed she'd gotten from being a Strigoi had helped her free him, and he'd felt his goals were worth the sacrifice. Again, Victor showed no remorse. His answer was simple. Natalie made that decision. "Can you say that about everyone you use to meet your ends? Guardian Belikov and Miss Hathaway had no say in what you made them do." Victor chuckled. "Well, that's a matter of opinion. I honestly don't think they minded. But if you have the time after this case, Your Honor, you might want to consider trying a statutory rape case." I froze. He'd done it. He'd really done it. I expected everyone in the room to turn and point at Dimitri and me. No one even looked in our direction, though. Most people were giving Victor appalled looks. I realized that was exactly what Victor had known would happen. He just wanted to tease us. He didn't actually expect anyone to take him seriously. Lissa's feelings through the bond confirmed as much. She felt like Victor was trying to shift attention off himself by making up stories about Dimitri and me. She was horrified that Victor would stoop so low. The judge was, too, and she chastised Victor for getting off topic. By that point, most of the questioning was done, the lawyers wrapped up, and it was time for the queen to deliver her verdict. I held my breath again, wondering what she would do. He hadn't denied any of the charges. The evidence was overwhelming thanks to my friend's testimonies. But as even Victor had pointed out, there was a lot of corruption among royals. The queen could very well decide that she didn't want the scandal involved with imprisoning someone so well known. Even if no one knew the details, his imprisonment would start a buzz. Maybe she didn't want to deal with that. Maybe Victor had bought her off too. But in the end, she found Victor guilty and sentenced him to life in prison. A different prison, not the one at court. I'd heard stories about Moroi prisons, and they were terrible places. I suspected his new home would be very different from the cell we'd found him in. Victor remained calm and amused throughout it all, just as he had yesterday. I didn't like that. The conversation I'd had with him made me think he wasn't going to accept this as serenely as he pretended. I hoped they'd watch him closely. A gesture from the queen ended formalities. The rest of us stood up and began talking while she surveyed the room with a sharp eye, probably taking notes. Victor's escort started to lead him out. He passed by us again. This time, he stopped and spoke. "Vasilisa, I trust you've been well." She didn't answer. She still hated and feared him, but with this verdict, she finally believed he could no longer hurt her. It was like the end of a chapter she'd been stuck in for months. She could finally move on and hopefully let those horrible memories fade. "I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to talk, but I'm sure we will next time," he added.
"Come on," said one of the guardians with him. They led him away.
"He's crazy," muttered Lyssa once he was gone. "I can't believe he said that stuff about you and Dimitri."
Dimitri was standing behind her. I looked up and met his eyes as he moved past us. His relief mirrored my own. We'd danced with danger today, and we'd won. Christian came up to her and hugged her, holding her for a long time. I watched them fondly, surprised at my own kind feelings for them. When a hand touched my arm, I jumped. It was Adrian.
"You okay, little Dampier?"
he asked softly.
"Dashkov said a few, suggestive things."
I stepped closer, keeping my voice low as well.
"No one believed him. I think it's okay. Thanks for asking, though."
He smiled and tapped my nose.
"Two thank yous in as many days? I don't suppose I'll get to see any, special gratitude?"
I scoffed. "Nope. You'll just have to imagine it." He gave me a half hug and released me.
"Fair enough. But I have a good imagination."
We started to leave, and then Priscilla Voda hurried over to Lyssa.
"The Queen would like to meet with you before you leave, in private."
I glanced over to the raised chair where the Queen sat. Her gaze was fixed on us, and I wondered what this could be about.
"Sure," said Lyssa, as confused as I was.
To me, she sent through the bond, "Will you listen again?" I gave her a quick nod before Priscilla spirited her off. I returned to my room, tuning into Lyssa while I packed my things up. It took a little while because Tatiana had to finish a few courtroom formalities, but she finally arrived in the same room as yesterday. Lyssa and Priscilla bowed as she entered and waited for the Queen to sit. Tatiana made herself comfortable.
"Vasilisa, you need to be in the air soon, so I'll make this brief. I would like to make an offer to you."
"What kind of an offer, Your Majesty?"
"You'll need to go to college soon."
She spoke like it was a done deal. And yeah, Lyssa did plan on going to college, but I didn't like the presumption.
"I understand you're dissatisfied with your choices."
"Well, it's not that I'm dissatisfied exactly. It's just, all the places Maroy are supposed to go are small. I mean, I understand it's for safety, but I don't know. I'd like to go somewhere bigger, somewhere prestigious."
Guardians monitored a handful of select colleges in the country so that Maroy could safely attend them. As Lyssa had noted, though, they tended to be smaller schools. Tatiana nodded impatiently, like she already knew this.
"I'm going to give you an opportunity that no one else has ever been given, to my knowledge. After graduation, I would like you to come live here, at the royal court. You have no family, and I think you'd benefit from learning politics right in the heart of our government. Along with this, we would make arrangements for you to attend Lehigh University. It's less than an hour from here. Have you heard of it?"
Lyssa nodded. I'd never heard of it, but she was enough of a nerd to have researched every college in the U.S.
"It's a good school, Your Majesty, but still small."
"It's bigger than the ones Maroy usually attend," she pointed out.
"True."
In her mind, Lyssa was trying to puzzle out what was going on here. Why was Tatiana making this offer? Especially considering how she'd seemed to disagree with Lyssa earlier. There was something weird going on here, and she decided to see how far she could push it.
"The University of Pennsylvania isn't that far either, Your Majesty."
"That school is enormous, Vasilisa. We couldn't ensure your safety there."
Lyssa shrugged. "Well, then it probably doesn't matter if I go to Lehigh or one of the others." The Queen looked shocked. So did Priscilla. They couldn't believe Lyssa seemed indifferent to the offer. Truthfully, Lyssa wasn't indifferent. Lehigh was a step up from what she'd expected. and she wanted to go. But she also wanted to see how badly the queen wanted her to go. Tatiana frowned and appeared to be weighing matters.
Depending on your grades and experiences at Lehigh, we could possibly arrange for you to transfer in a couple years. Again, the safety logistics would be very difficult.
Wow. The queen did want her around. But why?
Lyssa decided to simply ask.
I'm very flattered, Your Majesty, and grateful. But why are you offering me this?
As the last Dragomir, you're a precious commodity. I'd like to make sure your future is secure, and I do so hate to see bright minds wasted. Besides,
she paused, hesitant to speak her next words.
You were right, to a certain extent. The Moroi do have trouble changing. It could be useful to have a dissenting voice around here.
Lyssa didn't answer right away. She was still analyzing this offer from every possible angle. She wished I was there to advise her, but I wasn't sure I'd have much of an opinion. Splitting my guardian duty between the court and a cool university could be pretty neat. On the other hand, we'd have more freedom elsewhere. In the end, Lyssa decided in favor of higher education.
All right, she said at last. I accept. Thank you, Your Majesty.
Excellent, said Tatiana. We'll see that the arrangements are made. You may go now.
The queen made no signs of moving, so Lyssa bowed again and scurried to the door, still reeling with this news. Tatiana suddenly called out to her.
Vasilisa, will you send your friend here to talk to me, the Hathaway girl?
Rose? She asked in astonishment.
Why do you... Yes, of course, I'll get her.
Lyssa hurried toward guest housing, but I met her halfway.
What's going on?
I asked.
I have no idea, said Lyssa.
Did you hear what she said?
Yep. Maybe she wants to tell me how I have to be extra careful with you going to that school.
Maybe. I don't know.
Lyssa gave me a quick hug. Good luck. I'll see you soon.
I went to the same room and found Tatiana standing with her hands clasped, posture stiff and impatient. She was dressed like a corporate businesswoman again, with a sleek brown blazer and skirt set. That color wouldn't have been my first choice to go with her dark gray hair, but that was her style advisor's problem, not mine.
I bowed, just as Lyssa had, and glanced around the room. Priscilla was gone. Only a couple guardians remained. I expected Tatiana to tell me to sit, but instead, she stood up and walked right over to me. Her face did not look happy.
Miss Hathaway, she said sharply, I'm going to keep this brief. You are going to stop this atrocious affair you're having with my great nephew. Immediately.
Chapter 15.
I what?
You heard me. I don't know how far things have gone, and honestly, I really don't want to know the details. That's not the point. The point is that it's going to go no further.
The queen was looking down on me, hands on her hips, clearly waiting for me to swear I'd do whatever she wanted. Except I kind of couldn't. I glanced around the room, certain this was some sort of joke. I looked at the two guardians across the room, half hoping they'd explain what was going on. But they were doing that seeing without actually seeing thing. No eye contact. I turned back to the queen.
Your Majesty? There's been some kind of mistake. There's nothing going on between Adrian and me.
Do you think I'm an idiot?
She asked.
Wow, that was an opening.
No, Your Majesty.
Well, that's a start. There's no point in lying to me. People have seen you together, here and back at your school. I saw you myself in the courtroom.
Damn it, why had Adrian chosen that moment to be chivalrous and sneak another hug?
I've heard all the illicit details about what's going on, and it's going to stop right here, right now. Adrian Ivashkov is not going to run off with some cheap dampier girl. So you might as well rid yourself of that delusion right now.
I never thought he was going to...
Seeing as how we're not involved, I said.
I mean, we're friends, that's all. He likes me, he's a flirt. And if you want to talk illicit stuff, then yeah, I'm pretty sure he's got a list of illicit things he'd like to do with me. Lots of illicit things. But we're not doing them, Your Majesty.
As soon as the words left my mouth, I felt like an idiot. From the look on her face, however, it didn't seem like things could really get any worse for me.
I know about you, she said. All anyone talks about are your recent awards and accolades, but I haven't forgotten that it was you who took Vasilisa away. I also know about the trouble you used to get into. I know about the drinking, about the men.
If it was up to me, I'd pack you up and send you off to some blood whore commune. You'd probably fit in well.
Drinking? And men? She made me sound like an alcoholic prostitute when honestly, I'd probably drunk no more than other teenagers at high school parties. Telling her this seemed useless, though. Pointing out that I was still a virgin probably wouldn't have made much of a difference either.
But, she continued, your recent achievements make sending you away impossible. Everyone believes you have some glorious future ahead of you. Maybe you do. Regardless, if I can't stop you from being a guardian, I can affect whose guardian you are.
I stiffened. What are you saying? Are you threatening me? I spoke the words tentatively, not as a challenge. She couldn't be serious. Taking me away from Lyssa during the field experience was one thing, but we were talking about an entirely different matter now.
I'm just saying I have a great interest in Vasilisa's future, that's all. And if I have to protect her from corrupting influences, I will. We can find her another guardian. We can find you another Maroi.
You can't do that, I exclaimed. I could tell by the look on her face that she was happy to finally get a real reaction out of me. I was both angry and afraid, and I fought hard against my normal explosive instincts. Diplomacy and honesty were what I needed now. I'm not doing anything with Adrian, really. You can't punish me for something I'm not doing. I quickly remembered to add, Your Majesty.
I don't want to punish you at all, Rose. I just want to make sure we understand each other. Maroi men don't marry Dampier girls. They play with them. Every girl thinks it's going to be different with her. Even your mother did with Ibrahim. But she was wrong, too.
With who? I asked, the name hitting me like a slap in the face. Ibrahim? I'd never heard of that name, let alone someone called that. I wanted to ask who he was and what his connection to my mother was, but Tatiana just kept talking.
They're always wrong, and you can try your hardest to change that, but it's a waste of time.
She shook her head, like she felt sorry for these Dampier girls, but her smug air contradicted any true sympathy.
You can use your pretty face and easy body as much as you want, but in the end, you're the one who'll get used. He may say he loves you now, but in the end he'll get tired of you. Save yourself the grief. I'm doing you a favor.
But he isn't saying he loves... There was no point. The ironic thing here was that I was fairly certain Adrian did just want to use me for sex. I didn't have any delusions about that. But seeing as I wasn't actually sleeping with him, there was no problem. Except, well, that Tatiana seemed to see all of this as a problem. I sighed, suspecting no argument was going to make her believe that I wasn't interested in Adrian. Look, if you're so certain we can't have a future together, then why are you telling me this? According to you, he's going to throw me away anyway, Your Majesty. She hesitated for just a second, and I nearly laughed. Despite her trash-talking about me, my mom, and other Dampiers, some part of her really was worried that I might indeed be charming and pretty enough to seduce Adrian into a disgraceful marriage. She quickly hid her uncertainty.
I like to take care of things before they become messy, that's all.
Besides, it's going to make things easier for him and Vasilisa if they aren't dragging around baggage from you.
Whoa! My moment of brief satisfaction shattered into confusion. I was as lost now as I'd been when she first started accusing me of being involved with Adrian. Him and Vasilisa? Lissa? What are you talking about? I forgot the Your Majesty, but I don't think she cared at this point.
The two of them are an excellent match, she said, sounding like she was about ready to purchase some artwork. Despite your bad influence, Vasilisa's grown into a very promising young woman. She has a very serious, very dedicated nature that will cure some of his recklessness. And being together would allow them to continue examining their unusual magical situation.
5 minutes ago, me marrying Adrian had been the craziest thing I'd ever heard. It had just been trumped, however, by the thought of Lissa marrying Adrian. Lissa and Adrian? Together? You can't be serious, Your Majesty.
If they're both here together, I think they'll come around to it. They already have a certain charisma around each other. Plus, both of Adrian's grandmothers came from branches of the Dragomir family. He has more than enough blood to help her carry on the Dragomir line.
So does Christian Ozara. In one of their more disgustingly cute moments, Lissa and Christian had looked up his family tree to see if he had enough Dragomir genes to be able to pass on the name. When they found out he did, they'd then started naming their future children. It had been horrible. I'd left after Lissa told me they'd name their third daughter after me.
Christian Ozara?
That condescending smile of hers tightened.
There's no way Vasilisa Dragomir is going to marry him.
Well, yeah, not anytime soon. I mean, they're going to go to college and...
Not now.
Not ever, interrupted Tatiana.
The Dragomirs are an ancient and exalted line of royalty. Their last descendant is not going to attach herself to someone like him.
He's royal, I said in a low voice that was on the verge of becoming my scary voice. For whatever reason, her insulting Christian made me angrier than her insulting me. The Ozara line is every bit as important as the Dragomirs and Ivashkovs. He's royal, just like Lissa, like Adrian, and like you. She snorted.
He is not like us.
Yes, the Ozaras are one of the royal houses, and yes, he has several respectable distant cousins. But we aren't talking about them. We're talking about the son of someone who purposely became a Strogoi. Do you know how many times that's happened in my lifetime? 9. 9 in 50 years. And his parents were two of them. Yes, his parents, I said. Not him.
It doesn't matter. The Dragomir princess cannot associate with someone like him. That position is simply too prestigious.
But your nephew is the perfect choice, I said bitterly. Your Majesty.
If you're such a smart girl, then you tell me. Back at St. Vladimir's, how are they treated? How do your classmates view Christian? How do they view Christian and Vasilisa together?
Her eyes gleamed knowingly. Fine, I said. They have lots of friends.
And Christian is fully accepted?
Immediately I thought of Jesse and Ralph grilling me about Christian. And yes, there were plenty of people who still avoided Christian like he was already Strogoi. It was why he'd had no partner in culinary science. I tried to hide my thoughts, but my hesitation had given me away.
You see?
She exclaimed. And that's just a microcosm of society.
Imagine it on a bigger scale. Imagine how it would be when she's active in the government and trying to get others to support her. He'll be a liability. She'll make enemies just because of him. Do you really want that to happen to her?
It was exactly what Christian had feared, and I denied it now as much as I had to him. It won't happen. You're wrong.
and you're very young, Miss Hathaway. You're also delaying your flight.
She moved toward the door. The guardians across the room were by her side in the blink of an eye.
I have nothing more to say, and hope this will be the last time we ever have a discussion like this.
Or any discussion, I thought. She left, and as soon as etiquette said I could go, I sprinted off to catch my plane. My head reeled as I went. How insane was that lady? Not only was she convinced that I was on the verge of eloping with Adrian, she also believed that she could work some kind of arranged marriage with him and Lissa. It was almost impossible to figure out which part of that conversation had been the most ridiculous. I could hardly wait to tell the others what had happened and have a good laugh over it. But as I returned to my room to get my bag, I reconsidered. There was already so much gossip about me and Adrian going around, I didn't think I should be fueling the fire. I also didn't think Christian should hear about this. He was already insecure about his position with Lissa. How would he feel if he found out the Queen was already making plans to get rid of him? So I decided to sit on the information for a while, which was hard because Lissa was practically waiting outside my door when I got back. "Hey," I said, "I thought you'd be on the plane."
"Nope, they delayed it by a few hours."
"Oh." Going home suddenly sounded like the best idea ever.
"Would the Queen want?" asked Lissa.
"To congratulate me," I said glibly, "over my Strigoi kills. I didn't expect that from her. It was kind of weird."
"Not that weird," she said. "What you did was amazing. I'm sure she just wanted to recognize you for what you did."
"Yeah, I guess. So, what's going on? What are we going to do with the extra time?" There was excitement in both her eyes and her feelings, and I welcomed a change in subject.
"Well, I was thinking, since we're at the royal court, don't you want to check it out? There's got to be more to it than a bar and a coffee shop. Seems like we should know this stuff if we're going to be living here. Besides, we've got a lot to celebrate."
The full force of our situation hit me. I'd been so distracted by Victor that I hadn't even really let things sink in. We were at the royal court, the center of Moroi leadership. It was nearly as big as the academy, and there had to be more to it than the all-business side we'd seen so far. Plus, she was right. We had a lot to be happy about. Victor had been put away. She'd gotten a sweet college deal. Only my alleged affair with Adrian had been a downside. But I was willing to put that aside as Lissa's contagious excitement seized me.
"Where's Christian?" I asked.
"Doing his own thing," she said.
"You think we need him along?"
"Well, he usually is along lately."
"Yeah," she admitted. "But I'd kind of like just us to hang out."
I sensed the thoughts behind her decision. Our brief conversation just before she'd gone to see the Queen had made her nostalgic for the old days, back when it had just been the two of us on our own.
"No complaints here," I said.
"How much can we cover in 3 hours?" A mischievous grin lit her face. "The essentials." I could tell she had something special in mind, but she was trying to keep it hidden. She couldn't block me out of the bond, but she had learned that if she didn't think too hard about certain things, then I wouldn't pick up on them easily. She liked being able to think that she could surprise me sometimes. Trying to hide big issues or problems from me never worked, though. We set back out into the cold weather with Lissa leading the way. She steered us away from the administrative buildings, off toward some others set at the farther end of the court's grounds.
"The Queen lives in that first building," Lissa explained.
"It's not exactly a palace, but the closest we have. Back when the court was in Europe, Moroi royalty used to live in castles."
I made a face. "You make that sound like a good thing."
"Stone walls, turrets, you have to admit that sounds pretty neat."
"Yeah, but I bet they had crap internet access."
Lissa shook her head at me, smiling, and didn't dignify my comment with a response. We passed some other buildings that had the same ornate stonework as the others, but were tall and built in a style that reminded me of apartments. She confirmed as much.
"Those are townhouses, where people who live here year-round stay."
I eyed them,
wondering what they were like on the inside, and a happy thought came to me. You think that's where we'll live? The thought caught her off guard, but she soon grew just as excited as me. She, too, liked the idea of us having our own place, free to decorate it and come and go as we wanted. I rather liked the idea of Dimitri living with us, too, but here at court, he wouldn't be with her 24/7. For that matter, I actually wouldn't need to be with her 24/7 either. Would they let me live with her? Or would this just be another chance to show I wasn't needed? I hope so, she said, oblivious to my worries. Top floor, with a view. I mustered another smile. And a pool. How can you think about a pool in this weather? Hey, if we're fantasizing here, we might as well go the whole way. I bet Tatiana's got one. I bet she wears a bikini and has hot guys rubbing her down with suntan lotion. I expected another eye roll. But Lissa just grinned as she led me into a building that was near the townhouses. Funny you mention that. What? I exclaimed. She was about ready to burst with her secret. I was this close to pulling it out of her mind. I would have, too, if I hadn't been so stunned by our surroundings. It was sensory overload. Delicate music, fountains, plants, people in white robes, everything gleaming in silver. It was a spa, a full-fledged luxury spa hidden away in an old stone building here at court. Who would have guessed? A long granite receptionist's desk guarded the entrance, so we only had a partial view, but what I could see was pretty sweet. Women sat along a wall getting pedicures and manicures. Moroi men and women were getting haircuts and color. What looked like a maze of halls could just be seen in the back of the salon, with a directory of arrows pointing to other sections. Massage, sauna, facials, etc. Lissa grinned at me. What do you think? I think Adrian was right about the court having all sorts of secrets. I gave a mock sigh. And I hate having to admit that he's right. You've been so down about the field experience and other stuff. She didn't have to mention Mason's death and the Strigoi fight. I read it from her mind. I figured you could use a treat. I checked their openings here while you were with the Queen, and they were able to squeeze us in. Lissa walked up to the receptionist and told her who we were. The woman immediately recognized our names, but seemed surprised to be letting a damn peer in. I didn't care, though. I was too bedazzled by the sights and sounds around me. Compared to the harsh, practical lifestyle I usually led, this sort of luxury almost defied belief. After checking in, Lissa turned to me, face eager and radiant. I got a set up to get massages with these. Nails, I interrupted. What? I want my nails done. Can I get a manicure? It was the most exotic, completely useless thing I could imagine. Well, it wasn't useless for ordinary women, but for me, with the way I used my hands and subjected them to blisters, bruises, dirt, and wind, yes, useless. I hadn't painted my nails in ages. There was no reason. Half the nail polish would probably chip off after one practice session. A novice like me couldn't afford that kind of luxury. And that was why I so desperately wanted one. Seeing Lissa wear makeup had awakened that longing in me for some beautification of my own. I accepted that it could never be a regular part of my life. But if I was in a place like this today, then by God, I wanted my nails done. Lissa faltered a little. She'd apparently had big plans for this massage thing, but she had a hard time refusing me and spoke to the receptionist again. It sounded like the receptionist had to do a bit of juggling with her schedule, but she said she could make it work. Of course, princess. She smiled happily, entranced by Lissa's natural charisma. Half the time, Lissa didn't even need spirit to get people to help her. I don't want to be any inconvenience, Lissa said. No, definitely not. We soon found ourselves sitting at adjacent tables while Moroi women soaked our hands in hot water and started scrubbing them with weird combinations of sugar and seaweed. Why the manicure? Lissa wanted to know. I explained my reasoning to her about how I hardly had time for makeup anymore and how the abuse my hands went through made any sort of pampering impractical. Her face turned thoughtful. I never thought about that before. I just figured you weren't into it lately. Or, well, that you didn't need it. Not with your looks. Whatever, I said. You're the one guys worship. Because of my name, you're the one that guys, like a certain one we know, actually want for other reasons. Gee, I wondered who she could be referring to. Yeah, but those other reasons aren't very noble. She shrugged. The point's the same. You don't need makeup for them to drool all over you. Then I felt the weirdest thing through the bond. I saw myself through her eyes. It was like looking in a mirror, except she only had a profile view of me. But when she looked at me, she really did think I was beautiful. With my tan and dark brown hair, I seemed exotic to her. She felt pale and washed out compared to me, skinny next to my curves. It was surreal, considering how often I felt scruffy next to her luminous beauty. Her envy wasn't malicious. That wasn't in her nature. It was more wistful, an admiration of a look she could never have. I wanted to reassure her, but had a feeling she didn't want me knowing about her insecurities. Besides, my thoughts were interrupted when the woman doing my nails asked what color I wanted. I picked a color that looked like gold glitter. Gaudy, perhaps, but I actually thought it looked kind of cool, and it wasn't like it was going to last long anyway. Lissa picked pale pink, a color as refined and elegant as she was. Hers got painted a lot faster than mine, though, because my manicurist had to spend so long softening my nails and filing the nails. Lissa finished long before I did. We both had glamorous hands. We proudly held them up side by side. "You look gorgeous, darling," she declared, affecting a sophisticated air. Laughing, we went off to the massage area. Lissa had originally scheduled us for extensive massages, but the manicure had cut into a chunk of that time. So we modified the full-body massage into a foot massage, which was just as well, since we couldn't have put on robes or any other changes of clothes with our nails still wet. All we had to do was remove our shoes and roll up our pants. I sat down in a chair while my feet soaked in warm, bubbling water. Someone put something into the tub that smelled like violets, but I didn't pay much attention. I was too entranced by my hands. They were perfect. The manicurist had buffed and hydrated them to silky softness, and my nails had been transformed into gleaming gold ovals. "Rose," I heard Lissa say. The lady had also put a clear coat of nail polish over the gold. I wondered if that would give the nails a longer lease on life. "Rose!" Sensing that Lissa wanted my undivided attention, I finally looked up from my awesome hands. She was grinning from ear to ear. I could feel that excited news burning in her again, the secret she'd had while we'd been walking over here. "What's up?" I asked. She nodded downward. "Rose, this is Ambrose." I glanced absentmindedly toward the masseuse at my feet. "Hey, Ambrose, how's it?" I cut myself off before the words "holy crap" or "whoa" left my lips. The guy massaging my feet couldn't have been much older than me. He had curly black hair and muscles everywhere. I knew this for a fact because he was shirtless and offered us both a good view of his sculpted pecs and biceps. His deep, golden skin was a color achievable only by excessive time in the sun, indicating he was human. The bite marks on his neck confirmed it. A pretty boy feeder. Very pretty. His attractiveness was almost unreal, though. Dimitri was gorgeous, but he had little flaws that made him that much more gorgeous. Ambrose was too perfect. Like a piece of art. I didn't want to throw myself into his arms or anything, but he certainly was nice to look at. Lissa, still worried about my love life, had apparently thought this was exactly what I needed. Her masseuse was female. "It's very nice to meet you, Rose," said Ambrose. He had a musical voice. "It's nice to meet you, too," I said, suddenly self-conscious as he lifted my feet out of the water and toweled them off.
I was especially self-conscious of the appearance of my feet. They weren't gross or anything, since they weren't usually exposed to the elements like my hands. I just kind of wished they'd been polished up, too, if this male model was going to handle them so much. Lissa, astute enough to sense me being flustered, could barely stop from laughing. I heard her thoughts in my head. Cute, huh? I cut her a look, refusing to voice my thoughts out loud. He's Tatiana's personal masseuse. That practically makes you royalty. I sighed loudly to let her know she wasn't as funny as she thought she was. And when I say personal, I mean personal. I jerked in surprise, accidentally kicking one of my feet out. Ambrose's deft hands caught it before I hit him in his pretty face, thankfully. I might not have been able to communicate telepathically, but I was pretty sure there could be no question to Lissa that the look on my face said, "You can't be serious, because if you are, you're in big trouble." Her grin widened. "I thought you'd like that, pampered by the queen's secret lover." Pampered wasn't exactly the word that came to mind. Looking at Ambrose's young, beautiful features, I just couldn't picture him getting it on with that old hag. Of course, that denial might have just been my brain's way of refusing to acknowledge that someone who had touched her was now touching me. You. Ambrose's hands were checking out my calves along with my feet, and he struck up a conversation about what elegant legs I had. His dazzling white smile never left his face, but most of my answers were curt. I still couldn't get over the thought of him and Tatiana together. Silently, Lissa groaned. "He's flirting with you, Rose," she thought to me. "What are you doing? You can do better than that. I went to all this trouble to get you the hottest guy here, and this is what I get?" This one-sided conversation thing was becoming a pain in the ass. I wanted to tell her that I'd never asked for her to rent out this guy for me. In fact, I suddenly had images of the queen calling me in for another meeting to yell at me for having a non-existent affair with Ambrose, too. Wouldn't that be perfect? Ambrose continued smiling as he rubbed the soles of one foot with his thumbs. It hurt, but in a good way. I hadn't realized how sore that spot was. "They go to so much trouble to make sure you wear the right black and white clothes, but no one ever thinks about your feet," he mused. "How are you supposed to stand around all day and still manage roundhouse kicks and cat stances in bad shoes?" I was about to tell him that he really didn't need to keep worrying about my feet, but something odd suddenly struck me. Roundhouse kicks and cat stances weren't top-secret guardian terms. Anyone could Google martial arts and find out about those kinds of things. Still, it wasn't the kind of topic I'd expect a Maroi to casually throw around, let alone a feeder. I studied Ambrose closer, noting the way his dark eyes so carefully darted around and observed everything. I recalled his fast reflexes in stopping my kick. I felt my jaw start to drop, and I shut it before I looked like an idiot. "You're a damn peer," I breathed. Chapter 16.
"So are you," he teased.
"Yeah, but I just thought..."
"That I was human? Because of the bite marks?"
"Yeah," I admitted. "No point in lying."
"We all have to survive," he said. "And Dampiers are good at figuring out ways to."
"Yeah, but most of us become guardians," I pointed out. "Especially men." I still couldn't believe he was a Dampier, or that I hadn't spotted it right away. Long ago, Dampiers had been born from humans and Maroi getting together. We were half vampire, half human. Over time, Maroi started keeping themselves separate from humans. Humans grew too plentiful, and no longer needed Maroi for magic. Maroi now feared they'd become human experiments if ever discovered. So no more Dampiers were being made that way. And in a bizarre genetic twist, Dampiers getting together with Dampiers couldn't make more Dampiers. The only way my race kept reproducing was through Maroi mixing with Dampiers. Normal logic would make you think that a Dampier and a Maroi would make children who were three-quarter Maroi. Nope,
We came out with perfect Dampier genes, half and half, mixing some of the best traits of both races. Most Dampiers came from Dampier women and Moroi men. For centuries, these women had set their kids off to be raised somewhere else, so that the mothers could go back to being guardians. That's what mine had done. Over time, though, some Dampier women had decided they wanted to raise their children themselves. They refused to be guardians and instead banded together in communities. That's what Dimitri's mother had done. Lots of ugly rumors surrounded these women because Moroi men often visited in the hopes of getting cheap sex. Dimitri had told me that a lot of these stories were exaggerated and that most Dampier women weren't that easy. The rumors came from the fact that these women were almost always single mothers who had no contact with their kids' fathers, and because some Dampiers would let Moroi drink blood during sex. It was a kinky, dirty thing in our culture, and was where the nickname for these non-guardian Dampiers had come from. Blood whores. But I'd never even thought about a male blood whore. My mind was reeling. "Most guys who don't want to be guardians just run off," I said. It was rare, but it happened. Guys bailed on guardian school and disappeared to hide out among humans. It was another disgraceful thing.
"I didn't want to run off," said Ambrose, seeming very cheerful about all this. "But I didn't want to fight Strigoi either, so I did this."
Beside me, Lyssa was stunned. Blood whores stayed on the fringes of our world. Having one right in front of her, a guy, no less, was incredible. "This is better than being a guardian?" I asked in disbelief.
"Well, let's see. Guardians spend all their time watching out for others, risking their lives, and wearing bad shoes. Me? I have great shoes, am currently massaging a pretty girl, and sleep in an awesome bed."
I made a face. "Let's not talk about where you sleep, okay?"
"And giving blood isn't as bad as you think. I don't give as much as a feeder, but the high's pretty neat."
"Let's not talk about that either," I said.
No way would I admit that I knew Moroi bites were indeed pretty neat. "Fine, but say what you want. My life's good."
He gave me a lopsided smile. "But aren't people like, well, aren't they mean to you? They must say things."
"Oh, yes," he agreed. "Horrible things. I get called a lot of ugly names. But you know where I get the most grief from? Other Dampiers. Moroi tend to leave me alone."
"That's because they don't understand what it's like to be a guardian, how important it is." It occurred to me with some unease that I sounded exactly like my mother. It's what Dampiers are meant to do. Ambrose rose, unlinking his legs and giving me a face full of muscled chest.
"You sure?
How would you like to find out what you were really meant to do? I know someone who might be able to tell you."
"Ambrose, don't do it," groaned Lyssa's manicurist. "That woman's crazy."
"She's psychic, Eve."
"She's not psychic. And you cannot take the Dragomir princess to go see her."
"The queen herself goes to her for advice," he argued back.
"That's a mistake, too," grumbled Eve.
Lyssa and I exchanged looks. She'd latched onto the word psychic. Psychics and fortune tellers were generally regarded with the same disbelief as ghosts, except that Lyssa and I had recently learned that psychic abilities we'd previously believed to be fantasy were actually a part of spirit. Hope that she might have stumbled onto another spirit user shot through Lyssa. "We'd love to see a psychic. Can we go, please?" Lyssa glanced at a nearby clock. "And soon, we have a flight to catch." Eve clearly thought it was a waste of our time, but Ambrose could hardly wait to show us. We put our shoes back on and were led out of the massage area. The spa rooms had been in a maze of halls behind the front salon, and we soon found ourselves in another maze that was farther back still.
"There's no directory here," I said as we walked past closed doors. "What are these rooms for?" "Everything and anything people will pay money for," he said.
"Like what?" "Ah, Rose, you're such an innocent." We finally reached a door at the end of the hall. We stepped inside and found a small room that only held a desk. A closed door sat beyond it. A Maroi at the desk looked up, obviously recognizing Ambrose. He walked over to her, and the two got into a quiet argument as he tried to get her to let us in. Lissa turned to me, keeping her voice soft.
What do you think?
My eyes were on Ambrose. That all that muscle's going to waste.
Forget the blood whore thing already. I mean about this psychic. Do you think we've found another spirit user?
She asked eagerly. If a party boy like Adrian can be a spirit user, then a woman who tells the future probably can be too.
Ambrose returned to us, grinning.
Suzanne was happy to fit you into the schedule before your flight. It'll just be a minute while Rhonda finishes up with her current client.
Suzanne didn't look very happy about fitting us in, but I didn't have time to ponder that because the inner door opened and an older Maroi man walked out, entranced. He gave Suzanne some cash, nodded at the rest of us, and left.
Ambrose stood and made a wise sweeping motion toward the door.
Your turn.
Lissa and I walked inside the other room. Ambrose followed and closed the door behind us. It was like walking into someone's heart. Everything was red. Plush red carpet, a red velvet couch, velvet brocade wallpaper, and red satin cushions on the floor. Sitting on the cushions was a Maroi in her 40s, with curly black hair and equally dark eyes. There was a very faint olive cast to her skin, but her overall look was pale, like all Maroi. Her black clothing stood out in stark contrast to the red room, and jewelry the color of my nails gleamed on her neck and hands. I expected her to speak in a spooky, mysterious voice, one with an accent, but her words sounded blandly American.
Please, sit down.
She pointed to some cushions across from her. Ambrose sat on the couch.
Who have you brought?
She asked him as Lissa and I settled down.
Princess Vasilisa Dragomir and her guardian-to-be, Rose. They need a fast fortune.
Why do you always want to rush these things? Rhonda asked.
Hey, it's not me. They have a plane to catch.
It'd be the same if you didn't.
You're always in a rush. I shook off my awe of the room enough to pay attention to their easy banter and similar hair.
Are you guys related?
This is my aunt, said Ambrose fondly. She adores me.
Rhonda rolled her eyes. That was a surprise. Dampiers rarely had contact with their extended Maroi family. But then, Ambrose was hardly normal.
Lissa was intrigued by all of this, too, but her interest was different from mine. She was studying Rhonda intently, trying to find any indication that the woman might be a spirit user.
Are you a gypsy? I asked.
Rhonda made a face and began shuffling some cards.
I'm Roma, she said. A lot of people call us gypsies, though the term isn't exactly accurate, and really, I'm Maroi first.
She gave the cards a few more shuffles, then handed them to Lissa.
Cut, please.
Lissa was still staring, half hoping she might see an aura. Adrian could sense other spirit users, but she didn't have that skill yet. She cut the cards and handed them back. Rhonda put the deck back together and dealt out three cards to Lissa. I leaned forward.
Cool.
They were tarot cards. I didn't know much about them, only that they supposedly had mystical powers and could tell the future. I didn't believe in that stuff much more than I'd ever believed in religion, but then, until recently, I'd never really believed in ghosts either. The three cards were the Moon, the Empress, and the Ace of Cups. Ambrose leaned over my shoulder to peer at the cards.
Ooh, he said. Very interesting.
Rhonda glanced up at him.
Hush, you don't know what you're talking about.
She turned back to the cards and tapped the Ace of Cups.
You're on the verge of a new beginning, a rebirth of great power and emotion. Your life will change, but it will be a change that takes you in a direction that, while difficult, will ultimately illuminate the world.
Whoa, I said.
Rhonda then pointed to the Empress. Power and leadership lie ahead of you, which you will handle with grace and intelligence.
The seeds are already in place, though there's an edge of uncertainty, an enigmatic set of influences that hang around you like mist. Her attention was on the moon as she said those words. But my overall impression is that those unknown factors won't deter you from your destiny. Lissa's eyes were wide.
You can tell that just from the cards?
Rhonda shrugged. It's in the cards, yes. But I also have a gift that lets me see forces beyond what ordinary people can perceive.
She shuffled the cards again and then handed them to me to cut.
I did, and she flipped three more over. The Nine of Swords, the Sun, and the Ace of Swords. The Sun card was upside down. Now, I knew nothing about this stuff, but I immediately got the feeling I was about to get a raw deal compared to Lissa. The Empress card had shown a woman in a long dress with stars on her head. The Moon had shown a full moon with two dogs below it. And the Ace of Cups had shown a bejeweled chalice filled with flowers. Meanwhile, my Nine of Swords showed a woman sobbing in front of a wall of swords, and the Ace of Swords was a boring hand holding a plain iron sword. The Sun, at least, looked cheerful. It had what looked like an angel riding a white horse with a brilliant sun shining above.
"Shouldn't that be flipped right side up?" I asked.
"No," she said, eyes on the cards. After several moments of heavy silence, she said, "You will destroy that which is undead." I waited about 30 seconds for her to continue, but she didn't.
"Wait, that's it?"
She nodded. "That's what the cards say to me." I pointed at them.
"Seems like they've got a little bit more to say than that. You gave Lissa a whole encyclopedia worth of information. And I already know I'm going to kill the undead. That's my job."
Bad enough I'd gotten a minuscule fortune, it was also totally unoriginal. Rhonda shrugged, as though that were some sort of explanation. I started to say that she'd better not even think about charging me for that crap reading when there was a soft knock at the door. It opened, and to my surprise, Dimitri stuck his head inside. His eyes fell on Lissa and me.
"Ah, they said you were in here."
He walked in and noticed Rhonda. To my further surprise, he gave her a low nod of respect and said very politely, "I'm sorry to interrupt, but I need to bring these two to their flight." Rhonda examined him, but not in a checking him out kind of way. It was more like he was a mystery she wanted to figure out. "There's nothing to apologize for, but maybe you've got time for a reading of your own?" With our similar views on religion, I expected Dimitri to tell her he had no time for her scam artist fortune-telling. Yet the look on his face stayed serious, and he finally nodded, sitting down beside me, letting me smell the sweet scent of leather and aftershave.
"Thank you."
His words were still perfectly polite. "I'll be brief." Rhonda was already shuffling up my useless cards. In record time, she had them ready for cutting and had dealt out three cards in front of Dimitri. The Knight of Rods, the Wheel of Fortune, and the Five of Cups. I couldn't get a feel for these. The Knight of Rods was what it sounded like, a man on horseback with a long wooden spear. The Wheel of Fortune was a circle with strange symbols floating in the clouds. The Five of Cups showed five knocked-over cups spilling some kind of liquid out while a man stood with his back to them. Her eyes flicked over the cards, looked at Dimitri, then looked back at the cards. Her expression was blank. "You will lose what you value most, so treasure it while you can." She pointed to the Wheel of Fortune card. "The wheel is turning, always turning." The reading wasn't as good as Lissa's, but he'd gotten a hell of a lot more than me. Lissa elbowed me in a silent warning to be quiet, which startled me at first. Without even realizing it, I'd opened my mouth to protest. I shut it and glowered. Dimitri's face was dark and thoughtful as he stared at the cards. I didn't know if he knew anything about this stuff, but he was staring at the images as though they really held all the secrets of the world. At last, he gave Rhonda another respectful nod.
"Thank you."
She nodded back, and then the three of us rose to catch our flight. Ambrose told us the readings were on him, and he'd settle up with Suzanne afterward.
It was worth it, he told me. Worth it to see you think twice about your fate.